Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
So glad you could be with us for this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. We continue looking at the Mormon history book titled Saints, the Standard of Truth. It was published in 2018. Today we are looking at Chapter 4, titled Be Watchful.
21-year-old Emma Hale first heard about Joseph Smith when he came to work for Josiah Stoll in the fall of 1825. Josiah had hired the young man and his father to help him find buried treasure on his property. Local legends claim that a band of explorers had mined a silver deposit and hidden the treasure in the area hundreds of years earlier. Knowing Joseph had a gift for using seer stones, Josiah offered him good wages and a share of the findings if he would help in the search.
What's interesting about that account on page 31, Eric, is if you compare that paragraph with what it says in Joseph Smith History, section 1, verse 56.
And make a note that that is scripture. That's found in the Pearl of Great Price.
Exactly. But when you read the account in the Pearl of Great Price, Joseph Smith's history, you don't get that impression that Josiah Stoll hired him because he knew Joseph Smith had a gift for using seer stones. It merely makes it appear that Joseph Smith was a hired laborer that was digging for this alleged silver mine. And then it ends with this: "Finally, I prevailed with the old gentleman," that's Joseph Smith speaking about Josiah Stoll, "finally, I prevailed with the old gentleman to cease digging after it. Hence arose the very prevalent story of my having been a money digger." The fact is that Josiah Stoll already knew he was a money digger. That's why he hired Joseph Smith. But this gives the impression that perhaps people were lying about Joseph Smith because of this incident in his life. I think that's very misleading. This chapter, chapter 4, goes on to talk about how Joseph Smith retrieves the gold plates, and how eventually Moroni is going to allow him to go get the plates on September 22nd. The account starts on page 37, mentioning how Emma went with Joseph Smith in a carriage to go get the plates, but he doesn't bring them home at this time. What does it say in the bottom of page 37?
"When they arrived at the hill, Emma waited with the carriage while Joseph climbed the slope to the place where the plates were hidden. Moroni appeared, and Joseph lifted the gold plates and seer stones from the stone box. Before Joseph set off down the hill, Moroni reminded him to show the plates to no one except those the Lord appointed, promising him that the plates would be protected if he did all within his power to preserve them."
This is a part of the story that I really don't understand, because as you go on, he's going to take the plates from the stone box and put them in another hiding place. Why does he do that? They seem to have been perfectly safe being hidden in this alleged stone box
for 1,400 years.
And now he's going to take them out and put them in a hollow log? It seems like they would be less safe in a hollow log than they were in this stone box that was covered by a rock. But it goes on page 38 to say this:
"Joseph carried the plates down the hill, but before he reached the carriage, he secured them in a hollow log where they would be safe until he obtained a lockbox. He then found Emma, and they returned home as the sun began to rise."
This lockbox, why would you need a lockbox to put these plates in? If you can lift the plates, why couldn't you lift the lockbox? It seems like that would be something you could steal just as easily. But the point is, and that I think is what is missing here for the person reading this story, is you don't really get the impression at this point of how heavy those plates would have been. But we are going to get a hint on page 40 when it talks about Joseph Smith going back to retrieve the plates from the hollow log where he had put them hours before.
"Hurrying to the hill, Joseph found the log where the plates were hidden and carefully wrapped them in a shirt. He then ducked into the woods and headed for home, his eyes alert to danger. The forest concealed him from people on the main road, but it gave thieves plenty of places to hide."
Let me stop you there. Joseph found the log where the plates were hidden, carefully wrapped them in a shirt, ducks into the woods and headed for home, his eyes alert to danger. Where are the plates? Well, he's carrying them, wrapped in a shirt. His mother said he tucked them under his arm. That's the way her account reads. But then it says the forest concealed him from people on the main road, but it gave thieves plenty of places to hide. So why are you going into an area where thieves can find plenty of places to hide? It seems like you're putting yourself in unnecessary danger, but this is the way the story goes.
Goes on, straining under the weight of the record, Joseph tramped through the woods as fast as he could. A fallen tree blocked the path ahead of him, and as he bounded over it, he felt something hard strike him from behind. Turning around, he saw a man coming at him, wielding a gun like a club.
So he has these heavy plates. He's straining under the weight of the record, and I think this is a good time to talk about how heavy this record would have been had they been made of the metal gold, which is the word that has been used so far in this account.
And in Joseph Smith history, that's what the angels said they were. They were gold plates.
So if they were in fact gold plates and gold weighing 1,200 pounds per cubic foot, the size that Joseph Smith gives us, 6 inches by 8 inches long by 6 inches deep, would be 1/6 of a cubic foot. That would mean that the plates would have weighed 200 pounds. Now, that embarrasses a lot of Mormons who have thought this through. Most Latter-day Saints, at least many of those that I've talked to, seem to think that there was some kind of miracle involved allowing Joseph Smith to carry these plates. But Smith never mentions a miracle. His wife Emma never says there was a miracle for her husband to carry the plates. The witnesses who claim to have hefted the plates never speak of a miracle in order to do so. So this miracle story is something that I hear lay people bring up, but that's not an argument that I hear Mormon apologists use, and I've never heard a Mormon leader use that argument.
And you're not hearing it in this book either.
But he's straining under the weight of the plates. If these plates, in fact, weighed 200 pounds, he wouldn't be able to lift them or carry them for any amount of distance at all.
But wait, Bill, he was a buff farm boy.
Even if he was a buff farm boy, and I'm not doubting that Smith was probably pretty strong for his age and his size, but still, think about this, folks. You're talking about 200 pounds worth of plates. Now, Mormon apologists get upset with me when I keep using that number. I'm only going by the story the way it has been told. Moroni said the plates were made of gold. Smith said that the plates were 6 inches by 8 inches by 6 inches deep. If the plates were made of gold and they were that size, simple math would tell you that the plates would have weighed around 200 pounds. Now, they start coming up with all these other excuses like gaps between the plates and things like that. Think about it. If they're going to go to those kind of lengths to say that there were gaps in the plates or that they were even made of a lighter alloy, they are certainly denying any idea that a miracle was involved. Unless, of course, God can't give Joseph Smith a miracle to carry 200-pound plates, but he can only give him a miracle to carry lighter plates.
Bill, we have videos of you on YouTube where you've been out on the street of Manti telling people about this, and then you've had conversations, and I'm the one who organizes those videos, and so I get comments. I had one recently who reprimanded me for having you say that the plates were 200 pounds. He says it's obvious that they were made of tumbaga and they were only 40 pounds. How do you respond to somebody who tries to mix in other material to make the plates lighter?
Well, certainly it's not obvious because, as we've mentioned, the angel said the plates were made of gold. Moroni, according to the Book of Mormon story, was the last to handle the plates in the Book of Mormon account. He actually wrote on the plates, according to that narrative. He would have known what the plates were made of, and he said the plates were made of gold. If you want to say the plates were made of tumbaga, go ahead, but you're adding to the story a detail that's not a part of the story. Now, if you want to get down to 40 pounds, I know of some Latter-day Saints, they come up with 30, they come up with 40, they come up with 60 pounds. These are all arbitrary weights, but here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to challenge you. If you're a Latter-day Saint, take me up on this. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to go to your local office supply store, pick up a case of paper. A case of paper. How thick a paper? I don't care. Just pick up a case of paper. If you look at the weight of that box, it'll tell you it's about 40 pounds. I want you to pick that box up, and I want you to carry it around the store till you're done shopping. I want to then know, Were you carrying it by the time you were finished shopping? I'll guarantee you, you won't be able to do it. Now think about this. 40 pounds, you have to jump over a log. You have to be hit by someone with a gun. You have to get into a scuffle. You have to knock them down with such force that they don't get up to chase you. Remember, you're carrying these plates. They're chasing you. And you're Joseph Smith. You have a limp. How severe of a limp at this time, we don't know. But we know from this historical account that Smith, that he walked with a limp. It says that in this book.
Let me continue on page 40. Listen to this. Straining under the weight of the record, Joseph tramped through the woods as fast as he could. A fallen tree blocked the path ahead of him. And as he bounded over it, he felt something hard strike him from behind. Turning around, he saw a man coming at him, wielding a gun like a club. I find that interesting that he's bounding over this log with his handful of plates. It doesn't seem possible. And then it goes on, clutching the plates tightly with one arm, Joseph knocked the man to the ground and scrambled deeper into the thicket. He ran for about half a mile when another man sprang from behind a tree and struck him with the butt of his gun.
Now, let me stop you there. There's two armed men in this account. He knocks one of them down and he runs away. And it says he ran for about half a mile. Half a mile carrying these plates after getting into a scuffle with this armed attacker. And what happens? After a half of a mile of carrying these heavy plates, because it says straining under the weight of the record, another man springs up from behind a tree and strikes him with the butt of his gun. And what is Smith going to do with him?
Joseph fought the man off and darted away, desperate to be out of the woods, but before he could get very far, a third man attacked, landing a heavy blow that sent him reeling. Gathering his strength, Joseph hit the man hard and ran for home.
Now, think about this, folks. This is their account of the story. I'm not making this up. I'm just trying to stick with the story as it's being told. I am really supposed to believe that Joseph Smith would be physically able to carry these heavy plates with one arm, knock a man down with such force, and then run for a half a mile, then get into another fight with another armed man, and apparently knock him down the same way and run away from him to get out of the woods. And then he's attacked a third time. And again, this guy lands a heavy blow that sends him reeling. But he's able somehow, after he gains his strength, to hit that man hard and run for home. This is a fantastic story. It sounds to me, Eric, like a story that's being made up. Because if you were to try to recreate this story, it becomes impossible.
If you live in the Salt Lake City area, we challenge you to go to Sandra Tanner's Utah Lighthouse Bookstore. In fact, one of us is going to be there tomorrow, and at from 1 to 5 o'clock. If you live in this area, come on over. Lift the plates that Sandra has there, and let's talk about this.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism.